What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Life is Beautifully Complex. This is episode 7, and it's the final episode of our Pride series. And we are joined today with my friend, Chris Nesta.
Hello.
We actually worked together last year doing BHP work. Yeah. You're still doing that.
Still currently. That's absolutely correct.
I just met him like 5 minutes ago, so...
And Sabrina and I,
we've been friends for a while, and then we ended up working with each other, and I just, like, combined from there.
Where'd you guys work together?
So, I met her when I was working at my first job that I ever got, and then she brought me along onto Can You Hear Me as, like, an intern. And then it just drifted off from there. I ended up being her personal assistant.
Ah. Everyone needs one of those in life.
Yeah. And
I'm hers, because there are times where she doesn't remember things and I remember it. She's like, yeah, that's probably right. And then I get her coffee most of the time when we hang out before we actually do work. So that's how I just ended up with that title.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. It's a good one. I mean, I don't mind getting coffee, like,
no,
delivered to me.
Certainly not delivered.
At first, it was just a joke, because I would just film her as I'm giving her her coffee. And then it just turned into, like, all right, I'm a PA now for her.
Yeah. You should compile all of those in, like a supercut of one second where you give her coffee every day.
Oh, yeah. Well, you just ruined really my plan.
Foiled. So, Chris, tell us a little bit about yourself.
A little bit about myself. Well, like you just said, we used to work together in special education. I still currently do that. I am a behavioral health professional. I also do direct service. So I spend a large majority of my time, I guess, just being in service or emotionally available for people without going into the particulars of it. I feel like that's the greatest way to kind of sum it up. It's like you are there. And no matter what happens, you're there to deal with what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yep, you're just of service all the time.
Yeah, and I have run into some really, really unique roadblocks to that, but I'm sure we can talk about those later. Anyway, more stuff about myself. I'm a quote-unquote career musician, as in I have been playing music for like upwards of 15 years, but I still need to do the thing.
Don't we all?
Yeah.
I moved to Maine like a year and a half and some change ago, and I moved here with my partner, and we live here for some indiscriminate amount of time. we've definitely discussed it being a stepping stone, but we've enjoyed our time here in Maine.
Yeah, where did you say you guys wanted, you were thinking about moving?
Oregon is on the dartboard. I can't go back to Maryland. I can't.
I was just going to ask you, where'd you move from?
Yeah. I've been like slowly moving north until like the border of Canada. But when I saw that most of the towns like in northern Maine are named with numbers, I was like, let's not go there. But I used to live in Mass before this. I lived in New York for a short time before that. Not New York City. I'm not that rich.
And I feel that. I went to school in New York, so.
Oh, my God. How do you do it?
I was struggling. I'm being truthful. I was struggling for a good moment. That's the end of
that. It was a struggle.
Yeah.
Sure. But I've been moving steadily northward from Maryland for, like, the last 7 or 8 years of my life. Mm-hmm. And that's me in a nutshell.
Very cool. Yeah, I remember us talking about, like, Maryland and stuff when we were working together. And then you also did, like, basketball too, right?
Yeah, that's another piece of the personality that takes, like, more than one conversation to get to. I worked professionally with the University of Maryland college basketball teams. Kind of informally with the men, but specifically with the women. I was a student manager and varying roles for them for like 4 or 5 years.
That's cool.
And met a lot of great players, learned a lot of great lessons. And that's like the other piece of my life. I could categorize myself as a music person on this side, a sports person on this side, and then somewhere in the middle is where I meet the two sides of my personality.
Yeah, it's like
among many other pieces.
Yeah, it's like the two different ends of the spectrum. Like one's creative and one's not.
Yeah. Although I would argue that basketball can be extremely creative. I actually had that conversation with somebody recently.
When I was in school, I actually did sports media.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I learned that from.
Yeah.
But it's just like two different worlds.
Absolutely. I definitely have had like disparate friend groups as a result of that. For sure.
Yeah.
Ren is coming around to liking basketball more. because there are plenty of sports, in particular football, that neither of us really like. But basketball's been part of my life for so long that I just don't think I can give it up, even if my partner doesn't like sports.
Right. Forcing it.
Yeah, she didn't have much of a choice. Like,
right.
Oh, look, the game is on. Let's watch.
Yeah. Like, oh, it's the only
game. Oh, you don't want to watch? Oh, that's fine. I'll
keep
here.
It on.
So for those of you who don't know, Chris, when we worked together, and probably still now, wears very cool colored,
oh my goodness,
no lens glasses. That was one of the like major,
it's great for radio that everybody can see.
I know it sucks for you guys, but
it's a visual gag.
Yeah. What started that, like, oh, wearing the different colored glasses?
It's funny that you mention this right now, because I actually told like three kids this past year that I was going to tell them on the last day, and I totally didn't.
Yeah. Well, they probably aren't listening to this.
Yeah, whatever. This started as a gag when I was working in the mountains in New York City at this place called Camp Starlight. And I met somebody who I eventually followed to go work somewhere else in the woods of Massachusetts, where I was an outdoor educator for a while. And we were really into just like visual gags to keep the kids kind of engaged throughout the day. Because even if it was in the summer on top of a mountain, you'd think that that would make it colder. But it actually made it, like, closer to the sun.
Right.
So we just had kids outside at this Jewish summer camp where the amount of people on camp total was about, like, 1,100 people, including kids. It was a... Can we curse?
Yes.
It was a fucking machine. I don't know how they kept it running in the way that they did, but it was like, if you've ever seen an informal summer camp, like Wet Hot American Summer type thing, that's what most people think camp is. This was the opposite of that. It was like they just like churned kids out from activity to activity. It was nuts.
It's not like what they see in the movies.
No. Although I did work at another summer camp that was much more like that, and I enjoyed that much more.
Oh.
Minus the like ridiculously inappropriate parts of Wet Hot American Summer, of course. But yeah, this started as like a gag with some glasses that a kid left on the ground, and I just was using it along with somebody else to keep the kids from like paying attention to their own heat stroke. Just like trying to like hype them up during transitions, because I wasn't a specialist, which was somebody who had, like, they were in charge of an activity or an area. I was a counselor, which meant I was in charge of getting the kids from one place to another and helping out with activities and things. So during those transitions, there was a lot of just, like, walking across campus that was just, like, just, like, 12 kids behind you just heaving.
Dying.
And they started to ask questions as to why I had them, and we just kind of yes-anded them. I never told kids why I wore them. And they would keep asking and keep asking and keep asking. And the gag just kind of spiraled out of control from there. So like 2 months later, before the summer was even over. And we had like one day off to like leave campus per month.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, those were wild days. But by the end of the summer, I had like punched out the frames of other people's sunglasses and started growing a miniature collection. You know, fast forward, what, 3 years now? Maybe four? No, like 3.5 or so years. I have like 100 of these, maybe more, of just things that match my outfits.
Yeah, it's like become your staple.
It absolutely has. It absolutely has.
It definitely, because you would come in with different colored glasses every day, something that would match your clothes.
Yeah. And back then I had more time to like paint my nails and stuff.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, you'd have like that was neon. always a great thing for the kids.
I like that, like having your own staple to your personality.
Yeah.
Well, what I found really cool was that even though we worked with kids that, like, even just the whole school body in general, like, these were kids that were generally listening to rap music and, like, had their own, like, language. And, like, most of the time I had no idea what they were saying because it was something out of, like, TV or a video game. Right. So to have these kids that are seemingly, like, tough guys, you know, like, they didn't look at you with judgment ever, which was really cool.
That was, honestly, even though it started as a gag, it turned into something like that. I never really gave kids a chance to question why it was there. Like, I'm the adult that they have to listen to in certain situations, you know? Like, if I got the field group of kids for an teacher's classroom, they were handed to me. Right. They couldn't, like, pick and choose, be like, I don't want the fucking weird one with the glasses and the painted nails and like, the weird tank top when it's only 40 degrees outside. I don't want him. They just had to... They received me as a person, which is kind of how that works in real life.
Right, yeah.
So to have that in the school setting was pretty cool, though.
It was really cool.
Not a lot of... The only questions that we got were more like, well, why do you do it?
Right.
Well, why not?
Right.
That's my favorite answer. Yeah. Why not?
You don't even really have to associate it in particular with, like, gender or anything like that. More just expression.
Yeah.
That's what I thought was cool was, like, the world is so judgmental on its own. And kids grow up in that, like, judgmental realm, like, with Instagram and Twitter and whatever else. Like, it's people – a lot of times it's content that's just catered towards whatever, you know, it's not even necessarily real. So I feel like they're growing up with these judgments already of what, you know, like gender roles and everything like that. And so to take kids that aren't necessarily like they would be those kids that would fall into that where they'd be judgmental just strictly because they weren't taught otherwise maybe, or they haven't seen, you know, other things.
Behavior is like, not only is it quantifiable and measurable, but it's fucking learned.
Yeah, 100%.
Behavior doesn't just appear from nowhere. Those are instincts, and those involve like eating, sleeping, and breathing and drinking, you know? Not like the judgment of, is this human being okay or is this human being not okay? That comes from somewhere. That comes from your parents. It comes from online these days, or comes from your friends. It comes from people you hang out with.
Yeah.
Billboards.
It's like lots the of science, nature versus nurture type of thing.
Oh, yeah. Lots of that. There's so, I mean, you can look at it from a very, very analytical angle.
Yeah.
But also it's easy and still generally correct to think that, like, oh, this kid is hanging out with, like, this is more of a colloquial expression. Like, this kid's hanging out with, like, a bad crowd. Will the kid learn the behavior from the bad crowd? Science says yes.
Right.
Yeah. What a great newspaper headline. Science, newspaper. Right? Again?
Weird. I just thought it was, like, really cool because I admired your ability to, and still do admire your ability to just be authentically you. Mm-hmm. And I've talked about this kind of before, like, where I only came out to my family and friends, like, maybe a year ago, year and a half ago.
Sure.
And before that was really just suppressing it and still kind of don't feel like I really fit in any, like, type of way.
Yeah.
Like, I don't feel, because it was so long of me acting as, like, pretending as though I didn't feel that way, or, you know, my identity was so skewed that I just don't know where I fit in quite yet. And because it's been so soon, like recent. And so people like you who, you know, are able to express themselves and wear what you want to wear and like paint your nails and like do things that are just because that's how you feel and that's how you express them. Like, I just think that's so cool.
I appreciate that. But the problem that you do bring up is like, there's probably tons of kids, young adults, adults that, you know, in this state that wanted to go to Portland Pride, but ask themselves like, am I gay enough to do this?
That's how I feel. That's exactly how I felt.
Yeah. I've asked myself that question before because like, I'm not even really sure what the hell I am. I'm like, if you categorized everybody, and that's like, for as much fighting back as we do against categorization, we end up putting ourselves in very, very niche categories. like, I'm definitively not just bisexual.
Right.
Like, I'm attracted to both men and women, but I haven't, like, full-on dated a man.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. I've been with my partner for, like, upwards of 2 years now. And I'd say that, by and large, I still, like, sexually prefer women, but I do not perform that very much outwardly and socially, at least to a certain extent that like people would at least have guesses, you know, from first looks. It's like, honestly, it's none of your fucking business.
Right.
That's the truth.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Because like, I can be attracted to men and I can be attracted to women. Like, why do you care?
Right. Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, when I went to Pride last year for the first time, so it was just months after I came out to everyone, we kind of went for, like, 20 minutes. And I just was, like, I had that same feeling, like, oh, I'm not, like, I didn't want to wear a lot of rainbow because I was, like, I feel like a phony, like I don't, you know, because I haven't been dating girls and like, I also didn't, that's not my personality really yet, not yet anyway.
I mean, you're wearing all black right now. I know. So that says a lot.
And I just felt this like, and then this year, we walked basically just through Pride because so like, I have such bad social anxiety that big crowds are a lot. So that on top of not feeling fully connected to it was overwhelming. So we kind of just did our own thing. But yeah, it's interesting that like nowadays everyone's like, you know, no labels. But then they're constantly adding labels to, you know, everything.
Yeah. And while everyone does deserve to be like seen and heard for that particular reason, because of the way that this conversation started happening, like specifically with like litigation and lawmaking, like we stumbled into this like big trap of like actually having to legally define ourselves as gay.
Right.
And, you know, I'm sure that everyone would be riveted to go into tons and tons of, like, Supreme Court and, like, federal court lawmaking history, some of which I'm not really sure of what it even is. But basically, everything after that, at least in terms of, like, the mainstream public eye, we just have to keep delineating from there.
Right.
And that's been really hard for like smaller sects of people, like asexual people. Mm-hmm. Those people exist.
Right.
I forget the name of people. They're not furries, but like people who like literally think that they are animals.
Yeah.
You know, they're not called familiars or something like that. I was just having this conversation with somebody. God damn it.
I wouldn't know what it is,
but
I've seen it.
Even though like it's like way out there, and like for somebody who considers himself pretty queer, it's still way out there for me. But it's decidedly just different.
It's different, and it's valid for them because it's what they're attracted to.
So obviously, it doesn't feel like an overcorrection to us to be like, why can't you just be called queer?
Right.
Right.
It's just like, no, I want to be appreciated for the fact that I think that I'm a gay cat.
Yeah. Right.
And they largely didn't get the same, like, triumphant moment in the sun as, like, gay men did.
Right.
Because,
right.
let's face it, like, a white gay man still measurably probably has more social and literal rights than a black gay man.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so interesting because, like, working in mental health and working in, just like in a nonprofit and with kids, like I've had to educate myself on all of these things and like, I'm still learning because there's so many kids that will come to us and say, you know, I'm pansexual or, gender fluid, like, and at first I had no idea what that meant, you know?
Yeah.
And so having to educate myself has been really eye-opening because it kind of takes the judgment out of it when
mm-hmm.
you actually educate yourself on, you know, all the different sexualities and,
yeah.
It's really interesting to me. And like, again, I go back to like, how cool is it that even somebody that, you know, dresses up like an animal, like they're true to themselves. Like,
true.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Like, kudos to you that you can go out and you're just
be proud.
Yeah, you're proud of that. And that's awesome. To me, that's something that I've been striving for, just trying to live my truth and like
mm-hmm.
be comfortable enough in it.
Sure.
Cause I'm such a like, I don't know, like, very modest, very like closed off
yeah.
type of person.
Yeah.
Just for like sensitivity purpose
yeah.
because I am so sensitive to like other people's judgment.
Yeah, I can feel that.
But I think it's so cool when people can just like be themselves and be fine. And
frankly, like when I see or hear of kids that like come to adults being like, I'm pansexual or I'm, you know, I reproduce by budding.
Yeah, like they know at like a young age.
Yeah. How? How the hell did you figure that out, kid?
Right.
Like and
I
if
think
so
that's a question that
like
we all ask.
Yeah. Like you got so lucky.
Right, right.
To a certain extent. Obviously there's like tons of other things that are extemporaneous to that. But the fact that you say that with such conviction,
right?
Like there are people four times your age that have no idea who they are,
right?
Because like that just wasn't talked about until
mm-hmm.
you know circa 1980 when
right.
people start getting more interested into why our brains do the things that they do. I'm sure that you could speak to the fact that like I've met way more depressed 60-year-olds
yeah.
than I've met. Like 20-year-olds that have standard amounts of anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because the 60-year-olds grew up in this, just like basically grin and bear it.
Yeah.
That was a lot of the discourse for, sorry, actually, there we go. That was a lot of the discourse to parenting.
Yeah.
That's a huge generalization, I feel like, but I walked uphill to school both ways, you know, like these
no
sayings,
shoes.
Those
no
sayings
shoes.
Came from somewhere, you
right,
know,
right.
and they lived it.
Right.
And now they have like no other coping mechanisms to release any of that stress that they hold.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
To see like everything changing. And it's not the way that they grew up in.
Yeah. So like a 20-year-old that ends up having, you know, issues dealing with, you know, whatever, like even something like addiction, that's a way more quote unquote standard problem to have when you are young and supposed
mm-hmm.
to be learning these like boundaries or maybe, you know, something else was missing from your parenting or education, whatever.
Yeah.
Everybody goes through their own set of shit. Everybody's going through something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that's a way better thing to have happen to you when you are 20 than when you are 60.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big time.
Yeah. I actually saw, I think it was on Facebook, and it was a compilation of pictures, like really old pictures, of like gay couples, and it was like, well, they didn't have that back in my day. Like a standard quote, and then it's like 20-something pictures of like gay couples in like, you know, the 30s.
Yeah.
And it's not that it wasn't happening. It's just that
just
it wasn't
didn't
what
see
you,
it.
It wasn't
see
talked
it.
About
yeah.
at all.
Yeah, like when I decided to like live my truth a little bit more to myself and became aware of all of the gay things around me, like the 60-year-old gay men didn't just like
right.
appear from nowhere as soon as you decided to be gay.
I'm
right.
here.
Yeah.
They were there before you. And,
right.
and they probably did a lot more fighting
yeah.
than you did.
Oh yeah, definitely.
That's another thing is, you know, I feel like being almost 30 that I haven't been fighting for these rights and have kind of strayed away from it because I was so scared to
yeah.
align myself with anything in the LGBTQ plus community that, you know, I'm like, I am such a fraud because I haven't been fighting this fight with you and I'm just kind of starting, which is, I feel like I'll get there, but
yeah.
it's like, it's hard.
It's whatever social obligation you feel like you have to it, you know,
because
like, there's absolutely some people out there that are still in the closet that'll never be able to do anything, and that
yeah.
sucks just as much.
Yeah.
You know? So you do the little things that you can, and that's just like if we speak about living your truth, that's not just like being out on your own time.
Right.
Like if somebody like genuinely asks you a question about that. Losing this scenario in my brain. if you were comfortable with it, like backing up that you're performing it for somebody else, you know?
Right.
Like, if you are in the right situation and a kid wonders if you're gay, you'd be like, yeah, I'm gay. And that's that. It doesn't have to have anything, you know,
yeah.
extra attached to it. There's so much other information that the kid can see just by seeing.
Right,
you know,
right.
Because you look like a normal person to them.
Right.
maybe a little bit different than the person standing next to them, but not in a particularly more positive or more negative way.
It's
right.
just like a little detail that they wonder about you, you know?
Yeah.
Have you ever come across, like, bullying or backlash just because of, you know, what you wear or... Or how you act?
I gotta be honest. Yes. But I was a mess in middle and high school, and not necessarily because I was trying to figure out, like, who I was.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had a lot less of these types of questions that I have the luxury of being able to ask myself now. Those questions, you know, being much more gender or queer related. I was bullied solely because I was just a fucking weirdo. and I tell this to people when they ask about like my like distant past and things like that in Maryland, and I tell them I don't really remember much of it at all, and that's something that I've been working through a lot. Maybe I'll go to therapy because that's a good idea. Like people
do
if
that.
You're thinking about going to therapy,
maybe
go to therapy.
Do it.
Yeah, go to therapy because it'll help. And it's a good idea. And even if you have a bad therapist the first time, find another one that's right for you because it'll help. But yeah, I want to look back with the mentality that I have now on some of those things so I can just like figure it out and know myself a little bit better. But more and more I think of, I'm just like really fucking repressed.
Yeah.
Like memory loss levels of blockage.
I feel that. Yeah.
I don't remember probably anything past age 15.
Yeah.
Like zero. And that is crazy.
Yeah.
Like I remember like moments, things like that. Like, you know, the emotion that you get when somebody is trying to tell a story and ask you a question about it and their information that has populated the story scene kind of helps you figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I can talk about like most things from my young life. I need like huge memory joggers.
Mm-hmm.
Things
okay.
like that.
I feel that like when I was 14, I lost my cousin to suicide. So everything after that was kind of like blank. I went through like probably an 8-year like time period where I just was a mess. Mm-hmm. So, and once I was out of that, it was like, that was a whole different person.
Yeah.
Like, I have no idea what was going on in that person's mind. Like,
it was like a blur.
Yeah. And looking even back at, like, who you were in past relationships and things.
Yeah.
obviously, like, hindsight in those can be a little tricky because relationships are very much distant from, like, casual day-to-day coming and goings.
Yeah.
But, like, different fucking person.
Yeah. I literally have always been like, I actually got the chance because I dated this one guy all through high school, and he was, like, there when I found out, like, that day when I found out about my cousin. And so he saw me at my absolute worst, and I was awful to him just because I was so depressed and, like, just treated him terribly. And actually got the chance to apologize to him, like, way later on in life and was like, yeah, so, like, I'm real sorry.
Not a lot of people get that luxury. It's very true.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would have that chance with my two previous relationships, but similar things. Like, you ever look back, like, 7 years on Facebook? I'm not talking about, like, the time hop.
The time hop shit.
I'm talking about, like, the deep stuff. Yeah. I'm talking 10, 11 years ago when you were a child. And you look back at that person and you were like, who the fuck are you?
I do it all the time.
And why couldn't you spell?
Yeah.
Like, you were in high school.
Also, like, have you ever noticed that, you know how Facebook will be like, I forget if it was like this before, like, initially, but it's like, what are you up to or whatever? And, like, people, I always see in my, like, old posts that I would say, like, is doing blank. Like,
you were one of those,
like,
people.
What? Oh my God. Like, it asked you a question and I answered it.
Ashley is using Facebook.
Like, what is that?
I like what it says now, though. Like, it just says, say something. It seems ridiculously desperate. Say something to me. I haven't posted on Facebook in, like, maybe a year or plus, besides, like, liking or commenting on other people's things.
Or being tagged.
Yeah, I just feel like I have nothing to say. So the more and more I get to look at that, like, one Facebook prompt, I'm like, I'm not going to say anything. Lay off me, dude. Just say something.
Please, give us your... Something, just something, anything.
I'll give you nothing.
Were you a MySpace user? No. What? I was
not friends with Tom.
I was a MySpace fiend.
Yeah?
Like, I used to do the HTML coding, like, the whole thing, like, had, you know, whatever, and then, like, your top friends, like.
That's so funny. Oh, you had MySpace, he didn't, and I wasn't allowed.
That's
were
true.
You even at, like,
no, I was around when MySpace was.
She's 21.
Mm.
I turned 22 in, like, 2 weeks.
I made it,
but yeah, no, I was around when MySpace was happening.
You know what's interesting is that they did away with. So Facebook doesn't have a top friends feature. Like, mm-mm. What a weird thing to have.
That's what I went to Tumblr for.
It's definitely weird. Like, I think when the best friend thing came out on Facebook, and this just shows how fucking long ago it was that I cared about any of that. like, I think I made one person my best friend because he, like, is my best friend. And then that was the end of it. Like, there's been no other consideration past that one moment.
I can't even get my brother to say he's my brother on Facebook. So.
Yeah. My parents made the jump to Facebook a little while ago, maybe a year plus ago. And they also never post. And I also, like, I guess I'll just, like, be blunt about it like I usually am. Me, blunt, never.
No.
Like, I'm not on the greatest terms with my parents. And I disagree with them on a lot of things.
Yeah.
So the fact that, like, we both have the same last name, Facebook's like, why don't you want to talk to this person?
He keeps trying to get you to talk to them.
Yeah, and it shows me all their dumb shit. like they just figured out that, like, the internet is filled with cat posts. And my mom, like, 50% of you know, people in America love cats. So that's what is her Facebook feed. And I own three. I don't need
more cats.
More.
I don't need more cats.
That's so funny. It's so interesting what social media chooses to show you. Like, I'm constantly seeing, like, the algorithms on Instagram.
They change it all the time.
So if you were a MySpacer, I was a big YouTuber.
Me too.
And, like, I did some posting on old projects and things like that. Some with that best friend that was aforementioned. But I was way more of, like, a watcher and commenter. Oh, shit, what the fuck are we talking about?
Just, like, what they choose to show you.
Oh, yeah. The Facebook algorithm, the YouTube algorithms are infuriating. I hate them so much. Because all I want to do when I set out to watch a video from one of the people that I like to consume content from is most likely to continue doing that after their video finishes.
Mm-hmm.
So stop showing me all of the
right.
other random stuff that you think that I'm interested in because I accidentally clicked on, like, a news update once.
Right.
Get away from me.
Or you said something into your phone and now it shows you, like, all the things.
Yeah. My partner has a really interesting take on targeted marketing,
and
I think it's a good one.
Hear it.
It's kind of funny. She says, like, I am okay with, like, ads being shown to me about something that, like, I directly said, because all it means is that I'm going to get what I want faster,
yeah,
probably.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
She gives into it all the time, too.
Yeah.
I buy the things.
And there's definitively, like, a negative side, especially if you're an impulsive spender, to somebody, the equivalent of somebody electronically Facebook poking you over and over again to be like, buy that shit, buy that shit.
Yep.
Oh, you talked once about the fact that you need like toilet paper. Here's
a coupon.
Yes, coupons for toilet paper. Yes, I go get toilet paper.
Yeah, I say this all the time. I'm like, I'm the person that those things are made for because I will buy it.
Yeah.
Like anything. Any app, I'll download it.
I like the idea that it's just like unstoppable.
Yeah.
Like there's nothing you can do about it.
Right. Yeah.
She gives them all the paperclick.
Yeah, I'm like, well,
like the Hoover Dam just explodes. As soon as you download any app that has a microtransaction, and it's just like,
yeah, it just opens up to all of
it. Here goes my paycheck for this month.
Yeah, I know, like, my grandmother and my mom are so freaked out because we have those Alexas, the, like, Amazon Echoes or whatever, and it'll just randomly turn on and be like, oh, what's... I don't understand what you're saying. And I'm like,
what's the happening?
And they're like freaked out by it. And I'm like, it's the government. I don't know what to tell you. Like, just get over it. It's happening.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
The government's here. We're trying to make it queer. And what's the end of that saying? I don't remember. Whatever. Darn. Almost a joke.
Almost.
That's my biography.
Good.
My autobiography.
Ooh.
Almost a joke.
I like that.
Yeah.
You should do it. That'd
be relatable.
I just honestly don't... I'm like, if the government is listening, like, hello. Wow, they're bored.
Yeah.
Because, like...
Yeah, call in.
Right.
We'd
love
to. What do you think?
Right. Like, I want to know. What do you think of my life? Please, analyze it. I know that you want me to download all of the video editing apps and all the shopping apps.
Sure.
So, like,
get up and go out, Ash.
It never tells me to do that. It
my
never
watch,
does.
My watch tells me to go out.
I took my Apple Watch off because it kept telling me to stand up. Like,
fuck you. It's 3 a.m.
Right? We would be at work and my thing would be like... Stand up. I'm like, I can't.
I'm sorry. The reason why that's really funny to me is because if you can understand the context that Ashley and I worked, if she just, like, stood up unannounced for no, like, apparent reason,
frenzy.
It would be so funny.
What happened to my lectures?
Yeah. Our kids were the kids that were, like, bolting out of room, so there was enough standing.
Yeah, there was enough standing, especially like with a kid that I used to work with you and still currently work with. We just finished the year. like standing and like me announcing my presence in the room became a nonverbal cue. Right. Like if I stood up, that meant something wrong was happening and that it should stop happening. So I'm imagining my Apple Watch. I don't have one, but like if I had Ashley's Apple Watch telling me to stand up, we just like standing up like 3 times every 10 minutes and this kid just being like really fucking stressed out about like,
what's
what,
wrong?
What is it, dude? You're just doing math, man.
Oh my god!
Fucking calm down.
I think my nonverbal cue with my kiddo was like, I just stare him down. And the thing is like, they're smart and like they know when they're doing something wrong. Mm-hmm. And he would literally like do something not, you know, not what he was supposed to be doing, and then just look at me and like.
Yeah.
Like, I see you.
Yeah.
I think every kid just does that.
I see you doing something stupid right now.
Yeah,
like, it's happening.
Are you going to do anything about it?
Yeah, that it was. There was a definite, like, in the beginning, that, like, push and pull.
Oh, yeah,
was
sure.
It like that for you initially? Because
Because
he went from, like, a not so great situation and then to you, which was, like, he looked forward to you coming.
I don't even know if he still works. The previous still works for the company.
But he looked forward to Fridays because he used to come in only on Fridays for a while.
True.
And actually, my kid told me that I was the favorite until Friday when Chris came in, and then Chris was the favorite.
Yeah.
And why can't I be more like Chris?
So cool. I was so
cool.
That's
like a slap in the face. Kids are so truthful.
They liked how edgy I was.
Yeah, they
I'm a fucking edgelord.
Should have had your old makeup.
I
yeah.
know.
That would have been more edgy.
I just, oh, like, man. I was, like, such a, like, I tried to play Fortnite to see what it was about, but, like, I just don't care.
Yeah, and she's not kidding. That's pretty much all a lot of the kids in that class did at
mm-hmm.
that age.
Or
they
just
would they would go home. That's what they would do. And then they would come back to school.
Is it still as, like...
No.
No?
It's not as much. Which is nice.
Yeah.
That's a prank.
Yeah. There's less, like, obsessive game talk.
Mm-hmm.
That's still a large part of, like, how they communicate outside of school. Like, there's a lot of talk about, like, oh, why didn't you party up with me? Did you get in my party? All that stuff. But largely, there can be more focus on the stuff that's right in front of them. For right now, until there's like research to say it's caused by something, I'm just going to say it's like them growing up a little bit.
Yeah.
Because that's just kind of what happens to you. And what happens to human brains once like they, you know, get really, really fixated on something for a while and it doesn't become a complete natural obsession to your body.
Yeah.
Like, you played Fortnite a lot. Cool. And then your body's like, I don't know if I want to play Fortnite anymore. And that's
next
where...
Next thing. Next fad.
That's where, it, like, the two, like, separate. The kids that played it obsessively forever when it was, like, in its heyday. And then they moved on to sixth grade. And then there's still the kids that just play Fortnite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can definitely see the split between them. Like, how long has Fortnite been out? I don't fucking know.
I don't even know.
Like a year and a half and some change
yeah.
out now.
Yeah.
You can definitely see the split between the two.
Yeah, because, I mean, when they were in elementary school, we started having to, like, cater things around Fortnite. So it was, like, kind of meet them where they're at. And the teachers don't want to do that. Like, they're not going to cater their lesson plans to Fortnite. But, I mean, we literally made an entire map of, like,
oh,
they drew out the map of Fortnite,
shit.
Remember?
You're right. We did that.
Yeah.
Everybody, we made a map of Fortnite.
Yeah.
And that's what we did for, like, a week.
Yeah.
In elementary school for that classroom of kids that we both worked in.
As my jaw is, like, almost the floor. The whole map?
Yeah, the whole thing.
Yeah, they... And that was
like a detailed map too.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I don't remember what it was for. It was probably for like
that
geography.
Nightmare of an art class.
It was
yeah.
it? Yeah,
yeah,
it was art.
It's
a collaborative.
A lot of that classroom moved on to the school that I still work at. But let me tell you, there was just like a lot of, you know, I can only probably say so much if the government is indeed listening. But, like, there was some wild fucking teacher management issues.
Oh, my gosh.
Some stuff. And I'm a young person. I am of a young age. I'm younger than a lot of the teachers that we've worked with,
mm-hmm.
for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I've also been teaching for a little bit. I guess that's all to set up the fact that, like, I definitely still have plenty to learn. But I looked at some of the shit that they were doing in those schools to get those kids either motivated, moving, or focused on their work. And I was just left scratching my goddamn head.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just didn't understand.
Nope.
How, like, I could get 12 kids who have never, ever seen the woods before and get them in 1 week to, like, not want to leave campus and talk about science and do all that stuff to a teacher in a classroom and just look like they're totally just, like, gasping for air, just trying to get above water again. Yeah, it was really bad. It was really bad. And I guess that if we look at it kind of objectively, like, absolutely, there's so much evidence of why this is happening to teachers everywhere across the nation.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see it on the microscopic level, like, you're in there in a classroom, there are so many other little tiny factors that could include just burnout of the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't say, like, for all of the things that are usually talked about for, like, lack of kid engagement in schools, I didn't see a lack of resources.
No.
No. I saw just, like, staff stepping on each other.
Yeah.
I saw tons of different things. Like, I remember one point in that classroom of 20-some kids, we had, I counted them because I like to count things on my shift sometimes to stay attentive. It's riveting. I know. I just have lists everywhere. We had 13 adults in there.
I remember.
Yeah.
You counted how long I was out of the room one day. Like,
yeah.
Because they got in, at one point, they were like, they basically just didn't want my kid in the room if there was any issue at all. So I was told to just pull him.
Yeah.
And I was like, fine. I did that for one day.
Yeah.
And I was like, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
I was out like 6 hours out of the 7 hour day or something.
It is important to note that, like, we didn't work for the school.
Right.
We were a part of a service that the school kind of calls in to do extra social work. The problem is a lot of their issues were overlapping with their academic struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just, like, it seemed like irreconcilable differences for what the teachers wanted and what was, like, actually possible for the kids to do.
Right.
Which is fucking wild, because if that's the case, aren't they supposed to, like, fail them and keep them back?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or
they just push them.
They just send them right on to sixth grade with us.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Not understanding.
And you might get lucky with some of those cases, like, the kid has a ton of, like, aptitude and talent and intelligence,
mm-hmm.
to make up that ground on his own, you know? Because there is, like, some backwards overlap,
mm-hmm, right.
from where sixth grade starts. Academically, at least.
Right.
In terms of routine and procedure, there's, like, zero.
Oh, my God.
Like, they don't make the kids walk in line from classroom to classroom anymore.
Right.
Oh,
my gosh. When they would make them walk in these lines, and I'm like,
These kids are 12, man.
Right. First of all, like, it blew my mind that these kids didn't know how to walk in a line.
Yeah.
That was one thing. And I was like,
oh, my God.
Line is not next to each other.
True.
But then it was like, it became like they made them walk in a line to, like, lunch or, like, what, they had to walk on a certain side of the hallway, and there's, like, points where they had to stop, and it was like, there was no trust.
Yeah.
It was such a
wildly, like, sparsely placed expectations.
Yeah.
Like, you know the emotion of, like, where you're driving along the road and then you don't realize there's a stop sign and then you realize there's a stop sign. Oh, shit!
Yeah!
Fuck.
Yeah.
And then you stop at that stop sign. That's, like, what every 5 seconds was for those kids. They just, like, didn't know what the teachers wanted half the time. And then by the time they realized what it was or it was made clear to them, they were like, shit.
Yeah.
Which reveals itself in their behavior.
Yeah.
Like, why do these kids hate you? Oh, I don't know. Maybe it's something you're doing.
Yeah.
Like, they haven't demonstrated the capacity to be, like, ridiculously manipulative.
Right.
You know? And I'm pretty sure the only ones that could do that are at that age are, like, diagnosed sociopaths.
Right.
And they wouldn't be here.
Right. Yeah, I was constantly told, like, you know, they'll manipulate you. They'll get you to, you know, they'll lie and blah, blah, blah. I'm like,
yeah, they'll do it to get out of trouble or to obtain something that they want. But
right.
That's because all behavior is motivated by that.
Mm-hmm.
They aren't looking like 2 weeks in advance to be
no.
like, oh, well, I got to make sure that I get this and then talk to this person so that this person knows they're not making master
right.
plans.
They just
want to get more recess.
Yeah.
Like
right.
the motivators are clear. Get your shit together.
Right. Yeah, I know. That was tough. Like, that was a tough year.
Yeah.
There.
And then going from that to middle school, where the expectations from teachers largely are very clear,
mm-hmm.
At least behaviorally, there's a decent amount of variance from classroom to classroom. But,
yeah.
like, the expectations are usually very clear.
Yeah.
Like, when you fuck up, you fuck up, and
right.
there will be a consequence. That, for some reason, also doesn't get enforced that often.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But at least the structure is there.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to expect kids to, like, respond immediately well to that.
Right.
Like, they've gone from having no idea where the stop sign is to thinking that the stop sign's, like, right in front of their feet.
Right.
Like, they're living in a perpetual state of sink or swim.
Mm-hmm. I went my last day, I ran around the school, like, making sure everything was in place for my kid, like literally talking to every teacher, making sure a class was switched for him, like wrote out an entire like thing for the new person working with him. I was
yeah.
like, this is what to expect. And this, at this time, he's going to act like this. And like, because we got to know our kids so well, like we knew before they knew
yeah.
what they were going to do.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And that also wasn't really supposed to be a part of the purview
no.
of our work.
But if we didn't do it, I mean...
Yeah, there's a lot of, in working in human services, of like, who else is going to do this?
Right.
Like, is it going to be you? Because you're the last line, you're the first and last line of defense.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, shit or get off the pot. That's a lot of how that line of work goes. And like... That's a good thing and a bad thing, but when you're with somebody for so long, if they have goals to regain pieces of their independence, whether that's mental, emotional, physical, what have you, or academic, and all of a sudden, like, you're not doing the same things, like, you become a negative part of the rehab, despite
right.
having to
right.
be there as a therapeutic presence.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What are two things that stick together really hard? I don't know. Whatever. It's like trying to like pull those two things
like
apart.
Like magnets?
Yeah, sure. Like really, really strong magnets. There's some inevitable attraction between the two
yeah.
things even after you pull them apart. But like that's a lot of what that process was
right.
towards the end of your time. And
yeah.
As hopefully we get them more reintegrated back into school.
Yeah.
Or other things for other clients.
It was for sure interesting, and like it was one of my favorite jobs I've had.
It's
and
good.
I went from that to case management, which was rough because I was in northern Maine.
Yeah, I was gonna say that you moved up to Lewiston,
Farmington.
Another yeah.
That. It was tiny, and I was working in like Rangeley area, like way up there, and these remote locations, working with kids of families that like. I thought that the community that our kids were from was rough, but, like, there was no resources. There
yeah.
were no resources up there. And the kid, like, I mean, one of the kids' dad overdosed and passed away. Like, that's what I was dealing with, like,
yeah.
daily with these clients. And I was, like, just wishing to be back in the middle school.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, that's a whole thing.
Yeah.
It's a whole shebang.
And now I work in residential treatment in Las Vegas, so.
Oh, that's a thing now.
Yeah, I'm working. I do aftercare for an adolescent residential treatment center.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a good time. So you get to see them through to, like, be a little bit better and able to go home. It's rewarding.
That's probably a very nice piece of it. Yeah. Are you out there all the time? Or are you?
I'm moving out there the end of the summer.
Cool.
And I go, like, once a month.
Woo.
Yeah, it's fun.
I'll be there.
Yeah, she's moving out.
But I work in film, so.
Oh, true. Yeah, just make it happen.
Yeah. So if you're in Oregon, we'll be a little closer.
Yeah, there's a lot of dominoes that have to fall before we go anywhere, including Oregon. But
you can just slowly make your way out. You made your way up here.
I don't want to do that.
Yeah, there's a lot of bad states in between.
There are so many things that I look back on for, like, the past 8 years. I'm including college in that time, I suppose, because that also I was just not at home.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many things, like, tiny things that I'd probably change. But just the amount of upheaval that, like, each tiny place took. Like, I'm realizing that I've never had enough money or, like, power of self to move somewhere unless, like, really, really motivated to move there.
Mm-hmm.
That'd either be to, like, continue, like, paying your bills or, like, continue, like, have a job.
Right.
Somebody's hiring you to go do this.
Right.
The first, like, semblance of real structure that I had was, like, only 2.5 years ago at Nature's Classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And even that was a job that paid like $300 or less dollars a week. And you live in the woods.
Right.
again, if that job paid me like $200 more a week, I'd probably go back and do it forever.
Right.
Like it was that amazing, even if the days were 15 hours long.
Right.
But I ain't going slow if I'm going across the country.
Yeah.
I don't need that many stops.
Go there.
Yeah. Like, because that will be the ultimate victory, is that, like, I have made a personally motivated move to improve myself and not out of necessity.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I hear that.
Yeah.
All right. So before we end the episode, do you have any, like, advice or words of wisdom to somebody out there who's, like, maybe struggling with identity or just in general?
Struggling with identity in particular. A ton of other people have probably said this to you at some point, is that you're not alone. And probably at your worst stage, you feel the most jaded about it, being like, well, yeah, I fucking know that. Like, why are people fucking talking to me about it? I'm so angry right now. Like, that's how a lot of people feel.
Mm-hmm.
Try to find, like, if you think you've hit your rock bottom, then you know exactly where you can go from there. Try to look at your rock bottom as soon as you can process all that stuff as a positive thing more than a negative thing. Because if you don't like course correct, you'll just stay down there. And personal experience, it's not great. You never know how bad it gets until you can continually surprise yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So advice, try to believe people more when they're trying to help you. Because the thing that's probably telling you that it's disingenuous is inside your own head. Because that's how the chemicals in your brain work.
Science.
Yeah. Anxiety and depression exist in everybody.
That's what the imbalance is.
Yeah. So that little voice that, like, tells you to yell at your best friend because they're trying to help you when they've literally, like, you know, killed somebody for you before. it's a falsehood to a certain extent. So do your best to try and continue to be pragmatic and rational, which is very, very difficult when you're, like, compromised.
Oh, yeah.
Try to give yourself some time.
Yep. I feel that.
I think we both do.
Yeah. That's some really good advice. All right, well, the next episode is something really cool to look forward to. We'll be out on Warped Tour, so you get to hear a little bit from our experience on Warped, and
hopefully we see you in Atlantic City.
Yeah, come to Atlantic City. If you can get tickets, go to vanswarpedtour.com. It's been really great talking to you.
Yeah, it's great to see you.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you came. Thank you so much for coming on to our podcast.
You should Skype me in.
Yeah, for sure.
We actually can do that.
Yeah.
Technology.
This, the, what we use to host our podcast, it's called Anchor. And if you download the app on your phone, you can do like a, an, like you can join a, podcast meeting and actually record together.
I'll just like call you on my lunch break.
Yeah.
Exactly. Here's what I have to say for your topic at the moment before my 10 minutes is up.
Yeah.
I want to call in. I want to call in to this podcast.
All right. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, we'll definitely plan it.
Yeah, so listen on whatever platform you listen to your podcast on.
Make sure to stream it. Give us a comment. Give us a rate. Tell your friends.
Friends, family.
Tell anybody.
Stranger on the street.
It's like the end of the mixtape.
I know.
Life is so crazy.
We strive for it.
We strive for that self-promo as well. Make sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, anything that's linked down below. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Yeah, talk to you next week. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.